Kratom resists the clean verdict that both its boosters and its critics want. It is the dried leaf of a Southeast Asian tree that behaves like a stimulant at low doses and an opioid at high ones, a folk remedy turned gas station supplement, and the center of the biggest psychoactive regulation fight in the U.S. since synthetic cannabinoids. The only way to hold its contradictions together is to look at what the molecules actually do. This is the neuroscience of Kratom, the pharmacology, the harms, and the 2026 regulatory line being drawn between the leaf and its potent metabolite. This article is education, not medical advice. A leaf that behaves like two different drugs. Kratom is the ground, dried leaf of Mitragyna speciosa, a coffee family tree native to Thailand, Malaysia, and Indonesia. For generations, laborers in Southeast Asia chewed the fresh leaves or brewed them as tea, a stimulant to push through long days in heat and a folk remedy for pain, cough, and diarrhea. In the last decade, it has become a fixture of American gas stations, vape shops, and online storefronts, taken as powder, capsules, extracts, and increasingly as concentrated shots. Estimates put U.S. users in the low millions. What makes Kratom scientifically interesting and regulatorily messy is that it does not behave like one drug. Users report a stimulant profile at low doses and an opioid-like profile at higher ones, and the plant's clinical reputation swings between harm reduction tool for people escaping opioids and unregulated opioid hiding in a supplement aisle. Both descriptions contain truth. The only way to hold them together is to look at the chemistry. The alkaloids, mitragynine and its potent shadow, 7-OH. Mitragyna speciosa leaf contains more than 40 alkaloids, but two dominate the conversation. Mitragynine is the most abundant, typically making up the majority of leaf alkaloid content, and it is a comparatively weak opioid, an atypical one, as we'll see. 7-hydroxymitragynine, 7-OH, is present only in trace amounts in the raw leaf, often well under 0.05% by dry weight, but it is roughly an order of magnitude more potent at the mu opioid receptor and is a key mediator of the leaf's analgesic effect. The pivotal insight, established in a 2019 ACS Central Science study, is that 7-OH is largely an active metabolite of mitragynine. The body converts some ingested mitragynine into 7-OH, and much of Kratom's opioid-like activity in vivo runs through that conversion, Krugel et al. 2019. This matters enormously for the 2024-2026 story. If you take the trace 7-OH leaf and instead sell a product enriched or semi-synthetically converted to be mostly 7-OH, you have skipped the leaf's built-in ceiling and created something that behaves far more like a conventional strong opioid. That is exactly the class of product now under regulatory fire. Mechanism, a G-protein-biased opioid, and why the bias matters. Mitragynine and 7-OH act as partial agonists at the mu opioid receptor and behave as competitive antagonists at the kappa and delta opioid receptors. But the interesting part is how they activate mu. Classical opioids like morphine engage two downstream pathways: G-protein signaling, which carries much of the analgesia, and beta-arrestin recruitment, long hypothesized to carry a share of the respiratory depression, constipation, and tolerance. Mitragynine and 7-OH are G-protein biased. They turn on G-protein signaling while recruiting comparatively little beta-arrestin, Krugel et al., Jax, 2016. That bias is the mechanistic reason for cautious optimism. At the receptor level, low beta-arrestin recruitment plus partial rather than full agonism predicts a ceiling on respiratory depression relative to full agonists like morphine or fentanyl. This is why medicinal chemists treat mitragynine as a scaffold for designing safer analgesics, Chakraborty et al. 2021, and why some researchers describe traditional leaf kratom as carrying a lower overdose signature than street opioids. But the caveats are real and must travel with the claim. The beta-arrestin theory of opioid safety has been challenged in the broader field. Biased agonism reduces but does not abolish respiratory risk. And none of this protects a user who has concentrated the potent 7-OH metabolite or combined kratom with benzodiazepines, alcohol, or other opioids. Kratom's alkaloids are also multi-target beyond mu opioid. Mitragynine has measurable low micromolar affinity at alpha 2 and alpha 1 adrenergic receptors. Relevant because alpha 2 agonism is the same mechanism clonidine and lofexidine use to blunt opioid withdrawal, and it plausibly contributes to kratom's use for that purpose. Adrenoceptor Pharmacology 2025. It also touches serotonergic 5-HT, dopaminergic D2, and adenosine systems, which likely shape the low-dose stimulant, mood, and reward effects. The honest summary is that mu opioid partial agonism leads, but the felt experience is a chord. Metabolism, kinetics, and the CYP2D6 wrinkle. Mitragynine is highly protein-bound, roughly 85-95%, and extensively metabolized, mostly by phase 1 and phase 2 enzymes. Its terminal half-life is long, on the order of a day. Systematic review estimates cluster around 20-plus hours. With an apparent volume of distribution that is large and variable, Pharmacokinetics Systematic Review 2020. In practical terms, effects begin within tens of minutes to about an hour, and the parent compound lingers. Two metabolic facts carry outsized weight. First, mitragynine is a fairly potent inhibitor of CYP2D6 and a moderate inhibitor of CYP3A4-PAR5. CYP2D6 metabolizes a long list of common medications. Many antidepressants, some opioids like codeine and tramadol, certain beta blockers and antipsychotics. So heavy kratom use creates real drug interaction potential, etraconazole interaction study. Second, individual differences in the enzymes that generate and clear 7-OH may help explain why some people find kratom mild and others find it strongly opioid-like. The interaction risk, not the leaf alone, is a plausible contributor to some serious adverse events. Effects and use patterns, what people actually take it for. The best window into real-world use is the Grundmann Survey Series, large anonymous online surveys of U.S. kratom users. The foundational 2017 study drew roughly 8,000 completed responses. The recurring finding? Users skew middle-aged, middle-income, and predominantly white, and they overwhelmingly report taking kratom to self-treat pain, around two-thirds, and emotional or mental health conditions, around two-thirds, with energy and opioid withdrawal management close behind, Grundmann, 2017. Follow-up work has framed kratom as, for a meaningful subset of users, a self-directed substitute for prescription or illicit opioids, Coe et al. 2019. Convenient sample surveys have obvious limits. They oversample committed, satisfied users and undersample people harmed enough to stop. But taken with the pharmacology, they paint a coherent picture. Many people use kratom functionally and report mostly minor dose-dependent side effects, nausea, constipation, stomach upset. Garcia Romeo, Grundmann et al. 2020. That is a genuine part of the evidence and shouldn't be waved away. It is also not the whole picture. Dependence, withdrawal, and the harm reduction question. Because kratom's alkaloids are mu opioid agonists, regular use produces tolerance and physical dependence, and stopping can trigger a withdrawal syndrome. Typically milder than full opioid withdrawal, but real. Irritability, anxiety, muscle aches, runny nose, insomnia, GI upset, and craving. Preclinical work in 2024 confirmed that abrupt cessation after 2 weeks of mitragynine produced dose-dependent, morphine-like withdrawal signs. Withdrawal study 2024. Importantly, some survey and clinical data suggest that even among users meeting criteria for a kratom use disorder, the dependence is often not accompanied by the social and functional collapse that characterizes severe opioid use disorder. An important nuance, though not a clean bill of health. The open scientific question is whether purified mitragynine could be a treatment for opioid use disorder rather than a substance of concern. That question is now moving into the clinic. An NIH-supported IND for a mitragynine trial in opioid use disorder took effect in 2026. Following earlier human safety and pharmacokinetic studies of kratom in opioid-experienced adults, NCT 06072170. This is early-stage investigational work. A hypothesis entering rigorous testing, not an endorsement. Safety and harms, held honestly. Kratom is not benign, and an evidence-forward account has to name the harms clearly. hepatotoxicity is the best characterized serious signal. Multiple case reports and case series describe kratom-associated acute liver injury, typically a cholestatic or mixed pattern, appearing weeks into use and usually resolving after cessation. Liver injury case series. It is uncommon relative to how many people use kratom. The mechanism is incompletely understood, and co-ingested alcohol or drugs may contribute. But it is well enough documented that new jaundice, dark urine, or right upper quadrant pain in a kratom user warrants prompt medical attention. Seizures, tachycardia, agitation, and psychiatric disturbance appear in the case literature, more often at high doses or in polydrug settings. Case report evaluation, 2025. Deaths associated with kratom are real but must be reported precisely. Postmortem toxicology studies consistently find that the large majority involve other substances, opioids, benzodiazepines, stimulants, alcohol, making kratom's independent contribution difficult to isolate. Postmortem toxicology, 2024. Pure, single-substance kratom fatalities are comparatively rare in the literature, though not zero, and the risk plausibly rises with concentrated 7-OH products. Product quality harms are a recurring theme. The 2017-2018 multi-state salmonella outbreak linked to kratom sickened nearly 200 people across 41 states and prompted the first FDA-ordered mandatory food recall in U.S. history, a consequence not of the plant's pharmacology but of an unregulated supply chain, Salmonella Outbreak Report. Contamination with heavy metals and inconsistent alkaloid content have also been documented, Safety and Toxicology Review 2024. And the newest concern, concentrated and semi-synthetic, 7-OH sits at the intersection of pharmacology and product. A trace metabolite marketed as a high-potency opioid-like product with correspondingly higher dependence and overdose potential than traditional leaf. Regulatory status in 2026, the leaf 7-OH split. U.S. federal policy has bent toward drawing a line between the leaf and the concentrated metabolite. In 2016, the DEA announced intent to emergency schedule mitragynine and 7-OH into Schedule 1, then withdrew the notice after public and congressional pushback, leaving kratom federally unscheduled. The FDA has maintained an import alert, allowing detention of kratom shipments, and has repeatedly warned about risks of liver toxicity, seizures, dependence, and death, while stopping short of an approval or a marketed medical use. The pressure has since concentrated on 7-OH. In July 2025, the FDA formally recommended that concentrated art-synthetic 7-OH be placed in Schedule 1, explicitly targeting products above a low threshold, on the order of 0.05% by dry weight or milligram-level amounts in synthetic articles, rather than trace 7-OH leaf, FDA 2025. In July 2026, the DEA announced a notice of intent to temporarily place 7-OH and three related derivatives, mitragynine pseudoindoxal and two synthetic analogs, into Schedule 1, a move framed by the agency and by industry groups as targeting chemically manipulated 7-OH opioids while preserving access to natural leaf kratom, DEA, July 2026. As of mid-2026, mitragynine and natural leaf kratom remain federally unscheduled. Regulatory status is moving quickly. Verify current federal and state rules before relying on any of this. At the state level, the picture is a patchwork. A handful of states ban kratom outright. More than a dozen have adopted a Kratom Consumer Protection Act, KCPA, the American Kratom Association's model law, which legalizes regulated sale while setting age limits, often 21, labeling requirements, and increasingly caps on 7-OH content and bans on synthetic alkaloids, Congressional Research Service. Recent movers include South Carolina, South Dakota, and Rhode Island, whose 2025 Act, effective 2026, notably reversed a prior ban. Internationally, several countries banned kratom, while Thailand, which criminalized it in 1943 largely for opium market reasons, decriminalized it in 2018 and fully legalized it in 2021, granting amnesty to thousands of past offenders and now regulating it under a dedicated Kratom Plant Act. The honest bottom line. Kratom resists the clean verdict that both its boosters and its critics want. The traditional leaf is a low-potency, G-protein-biased, multi-target opioid that many people use functionally for pain, mood, and getting off harder drugs, with real but usually manageable dependence and a fatality record dominated by polydrug combinations. The concentrated 7-OH products now flooding the market are a different animal. A potent opioid metabolite, stripped of the leaf's natural ceiling and the legitimate driver of the 2026 scheduling fight. The pharmacology that makes metragonine a promising research scaffold for safer analgesics is the same pharmacology that, concentrated and unregulated, produces a genuine opioid risk. Both are true at once. And the regulatory line being drawn between leaf and 7-OH is, for once, a distinction the science broadly supports. UTW Journal is educational and does not provide medical advice. Kratom is not an approved treatment for pain, mood disorders, or opioid use disorder. Metragonine's therapeutic potential is confined to early clinical research. If you use Kratom and develop jaundice, severe abdominal pain, seizures, or difficulty stopping, seek medical care. This article is education, not medical advice.